Chased our pleasures here, dug our treasures there. But can't you still recall the time we cried? Break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Live from the Regis Suites in Peoria, Arizona, this is a Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network. And starring, I should say, Don Williams. Get on to it. A great show about really self-improvement, how to become your best. Don, nice seeing you again, and you're looking great.
Pleasure as always, Dave. Thanks for having me. I love being here for the show.
It's awesome. And so what's been going on in your world? You're doing some seminars, some workshops, helping people.
Yes. This month I'm really focusing on how I can help people in a way that they're dealing with unconscious things that are pulling them one way or another. And I have a course called The Five Needs. Discovering your motivations, and it's very simple, but it takes a little bit of a mental change that I help my classes go through to understand how these simple but significant needs are pushing and pulling them, and unconsciously, because they're not aware of it, they're actually hoping for something and working towards something and not recognizing these lacks or extremes are holding them back. So this, the awareness itself really opens up doors. One of the people that I had worked with, she's a speaker. I went through the five concepts and the five needs, and she said, wow, I didn't recognize how this one need had affected me in such a way. And all of a sudden it was like a sense of clarity had opened up for her, and how things had shaped over her life, and how decisions were made. And now the way she approaches life is so different just by being aware of it. So the things that it does for people is really amazing.
You know, that it's such an important topic, important lesson in life that people, you know, they shouldn't settle for what they've always done, because they'll always get the same thing. And it's really important that people continually learn to know what their purpose is, live their purpose, and fulfill their potential. And that's what this show is about. And Don, you have a great guest today.
That dovetails into the topic that we're going to be working with today. And that has to do with, what is your willingness to learn? And that kind of goes with, what are you willing to let go or give up that you're being attached to, whether you're aware of it or not, that's holding back your ability to grow as a person.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And why don't you introduce your very special guest? She has such a great background, done so many things to help people and overcome amazing obstacles in her own life. Just an inspiration to those who will now enjoy what she has to say. Don, who's your guest?
Hello, everyone. I'm proud to present you Kate Romero. She has grown up in a country atmosphere, has overcome a lot of challenges, which we will discuss, and has gotten into and was successful in the Hollywood life, and has gone through some personal challenges at one point, and made an additional shift using her Hollywood background and connections to create stellar angel talent. Her PR firm for assisting and aiding those with the talent that is relative to her experience and taking them where they have the potential to be if they're willing to let go and give up what she expresses through her knowledge to get them to where they want to be.
And Kate, welcome to the show.
Hello, hello. It's nice to be on your show.
Did I describe that very well?
Pardon me?
Did I describe that about right?
You did. Stellar Angel Talent is a talent management company where I represent actors and other artists. And everyone's PR is the PR company that I own with my husband, John. So I wear many hats, and I'm also a writer, and I do some acting myself. So there, you know, I believe in this life that we can all have it all, and that's the kind of belief system I like to instill in others.
You know, and Kate, that's this is Dave Isaac, the host. You know,
and
hi, how are you? You know, this is so important, and what you said is key. You know, belief systems. You know, what you believe is so critical in life because you will manifest what you believe. Why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, that's as constant as gravity, and we all know gravity works, especially if you jump off a building. So for me, I have a Katieism. It goes like this. It costs us nothing to believe. It costs us everything if we don't. Believing is free. You can have all you want, and it doesn't have any calories, which is all true. And I'm also writing a children's book called Belief Stew, S-T-E-W, Belief Stew.
That is very
And whenever
cool.
you get yourself, yeah, you get yourself in a bind, you just stir your belief stew and add something else to it, and it'll all work out. But really, what you focus on expands, and the key element that I strive to live by every breath of every moment of every hour, week, day, year, my entire life, is to understand that my opinion of myself in any given moment creates my reality. It either creates it or destroys it, and it's all contingent on who I believe I am. And if I had believed the horrible things I was told about myself as I was growing up by various authority figures, I would probably not be alive today. I probably would have ended up selling my body on a corner with a needle in my arm and not making it. But I chose not to believe what these people were saying. I chose to love them instead, and that confused the heck out of them because they didn't want me to love them because they didn't feel lovable, which is why they treated me the way they did. And I could see past it. I was just born with that kind of vision where I could see past a person's pain, and I wasn't afraid of their fear. And I'm still not. I believe whatever successes that I have in my life come from my belief, and my belief that all people are good and a lot of people are in pain. And it's like having leukemia. I mean, if somebody's in pain, you can't make them wrong for it. It's like making someone who's got a disease they can't help wrong for it. But what you can do is have strong boundaries and respect your boundaries and just do your best not to make that person wrong, but do your best to take care of yourself. And how you feel about yourself really determines your level of self-respect. So you see how it's all interconnected and related.
This is Don here. Well, you're also saying too, right? This is where people often get confused about self-love. It's mixed in with that self-respect in that you see yourself as a whole, and it's not self-serving when you take care of your own needs or your own requirements to fulfill what is satisfying to you and happy for your own life, as long as it's not taking away or imposing on someone else. And as long as you can keep that space, manage that space, then whatever you believe can happen. Is that basically what you're saying?
Pretty much. And it's here it is in a nutshell. If my pitcher is not full by the self-care I provide for me, I cannot have anything to pour into your cup.
You know, Kate, that totally makes sense. And, you know, there's probably listeners out there that intellectually understand this concept. But what would you tell them how to embrace this concept? I guess a better question might be, how did you learn this? Because not everyone is born understanding what you understood and continue to understand. So what was the process that you went through to really embrace it? Did you have a mentor? Did you read books? Maybe all of the above? Was it just intuitive to you? And how would you describe that?
I would describe it as, I'll tell you a little story. How transparent would you like for me to be? Because I'm willing to just tell the truth about all of it. And I know that there are listeners who would want to hear it because, no guest is on any show unless the listeners out there call that person forth to answer questions they have in their soul. So I believe that the audience lives inside of us. So I'm willing to speak about any. I know we have an hour, so I can speak and go deep, and I can let people know from where I come and where I am now, and how neither were predictable.
Yes, Kate, that's why we have you as a guest. That's why I wanted to have you on. I knew there is a story within you that needs to be told, and more people need to hear it. And as much as I appreciate what I'm able to put out there, I know there are so many other people like myself, like you, who also have so much to offer, and that we just got to put out there in any which way that we can explain it, given our background. So feel free to explain it as concise and as detailed as you feel comfortable.
Thank you. Your question triggered a memory for me. And you said, how did I learn, did I have a mentor, to be the way that I am? And I loved Dr. Seuss. Loved Dr. Seuss. And the only exposure to Dr. Seuss that I had in my life was at school. And in second grade, I couldn't get enough of Dr. Seuss. So I, in one of the Dr. Seuss books, I wrote down in crayon the address to send away for Dr. Seuss books. And I went home with my crayons, and I had an envelope, and I wrote a note saying, I would like any Dr. Seuss book that you can send to me. I don't have any money, but if you could just send me one that I could read in my home, that would be so great. Thank you, thank you. And then I drew a picture of a postage stamp with my crayons on the front of that envelope, and I addressed it with crayon. I put my address inside the envelope instead of on the outside, my return address. And I was really frightened to do that because in my home, I wasn't allowed to do anything beyond work on the farm and be invisible. So the fact that I'd done that, I knew I was risking. I knew I was risking a lot. And it was worth it to me. And that's how desperate I was.
What age were you at this point?
Second grade.
Second grade.
So about 7 years old, about somewhere like that.
Young, like I can't remember what age is what grade, but I was around 8 or 9, okay. Around 9. And so I watched and watched every day when we lived in very rural Kentucky, Moorhead, Kentucky, on Big Brushy Road, which our closest neighbor was 5 miles away. And so the roads weren't even paved. When it rained, they would just be potholes, but the mailman always came. Special delivery car always came. And I snuck and put my letter in the mailbox right before the mailman came so no one would catch me. I put the flag up on the mailbox, and the mailbox was practically not even standing. It was so wobbly. And he came, he took it out, and I watched him look at it and smile, and he put it in his bag, and he went on his way. And I knew that he'd received it. So I waited and waited, so anxious. I was so anxious that my heart was beating so fast every day when the mail was supposed to come. I'm looking out the window, looking out the window. And then a car, the special delivery mail car, pulls in our driveway. And my heart skipped a beat, and I'm thinking, oh, my gosh, could this be my Dr. Seuss book? And so the man came up to the door, and he knocked on the door. And my mother goes to the door, and she's like, who the hell is this? And I'm just hiding behind her, you know, cowering, just knowing, the stuff's about to hit the fan. And so she opens up the door, and the mailman says, I have a special delivery for Kate Romero. And she said, what? No, you don't. He said, yes, I do, ma'am. Is this her right here? And I said, yes, it's me, it's me. So he handed me a big box. And I was so excited, and I didn't even care about her authority over me in that moment. And it was winter, and we had a pot-bellied stove. We had no running water in the house and no heat except for burning wood in the pot-bellied stove. And the only way we could cook was with a wood stove in the kitchen. So in the heat of the summer, it got really hot when you would cook because you've got to use that stove. And so the pot-bellied stove was the only heat source we had in the house, and you'll see why I'm telling you this. So I bring it in, I open it up so fast, and I look. Not only did I get one Dr. Seuss book, I got the whole library.
Oh, wow.
And I was just speechless that somebody in the world knew I was alive and cared about me and that the stamp I drew worked. And it was so magical. It was so magical. And my mother standing there chewing on her lip like she did when she was mad, and then chewing on her jaw, which was worse, and she's looking down at me with her eyebrows up. Mm. And she said, "Why did you get those?" And I said, I sent away for them. Where did you get the stamp? I drew it with a crayon. Who said you could do that? And I said, nobody. And I was looking through the Dr. Seuss books, and I was smelling them, and the ink smelled so good, and it was so shiny, and hardcover books. And I was holding them to my chest, and everyone I took out of the box, she took from me and put in the Potbelly stove and burned it.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah, so she burned all my books after the miracle had happened that brought them to me. And I knew from then forward that I was going to be my own person, and nobody's going to keep me down, but I will put my happiness on layaway until I'm old enough to use it.
You know, you mentioned earlier, before you started the story, that, you know, when you were young, you knew that you had to have your own beliefs, but you would still love the people that, in essence, held you back. How hard was that? And then you can go on with your story, but this is what's popping up in my mind. How hard was it at that moment to love your mom?
I figured she would do that, but it was worth it to me to see if I had any power. And I obviously had power because I caused those books to come to me.
True.
Yeah, well, it's almost as if she resented the fact that you were able to accomplish something based off of just a desire. It was like a spite. Like, is like, how is it that you can do this? I don't believe that you can do this. Even though this is here, I'm going to remove all evidence of it so that you are under my belief system.
Yes, exactly. And it was very difficult to love my family while they were beating me. And I would say, you know, I love you. Why are you hitting me? I love you. Why are you hitting me? And that would cause them to hit me more, because they didn't understand how I could love them, because they didn't want the love. And I understood innately, somehow, some way, from my very first beginnings, that the people who were hurting me were hurting themselves.
Yeah.
That it hurt them more than me. And that I would survive and I would heal. But they never would. And I just had compassion and empathy for them, just as a natural instinct of being born. And I know for myself that I chose this life before I was born. I know that sounds pretty woo-woo, but it's my BS. It's my belief system. I call belief system BS. So you can think of it either way. Is your BS hurting you, or is your BS helping you?
Right.
And in that instance, my BS was helping me, because I just know that I was sitting around the table with all the masters before I was born, and my mother was there, and all my siblings, and all the people I will ever meet in my life. We all agreed to something. We all agreed that if I came to this earth plane, that my gift that I would get through learning and experience would be forgiveness. And all the people there that ever hurt me in my life agreed to have their hearts go blind, especially my mother, so that I could learn the gift of forgiveness. And that we would all forget about it until one of us passed away. And when my mother passed away, she came to me when I was at the Monroe Institute having out-of-body experiences, which we call OBs. Monroe Institute is where you do out-of-body traveling, and they teach you for 1 week in residence there. And I had this encounter with my mother there. And she used to cut my hair off with a razor blade, a dull one, which felt like I was being scalped, because she didn't want my hair to get hung up in the barbed wire on the farm. And I loved having long hair. And as soon as I got big enough to run from her and that razor blade, I grew my hair long down past my behind, as long as I could get it, as long as I could keep it that way. And I'm skipping around, but it'll make sense when I finish.
I'm sure it will.
I had about 3 years ago a breast cancer scare, and I was going to get a biopsy. And before I did that, I thought, what's the best thing I can do right now? And I chopped off all my long hair, and I sold it, or I didn't sell it, I donated it to Locks of Love. And as soon as I did that, I felt so good And the biopsy results came back negative, so I was fine. And I believed with all my heart, because I donated my hair before I ever got a result that changed the results, and they came back negative, that there's nothing wrong with me. So at the Monroe Institute, when my mother came to me, she knew I rebelled and had long hair because she used to keep my hair short. The first thing she said to me was, "I love your short hair. It shows off your beautiful face." Mm. And I then trusted her to communicate more with me. And then she reminded me of our agreement we made before I came to Earth and before I was born, that she had made her heart go blind and given up her own happiness to help me learn forgiveness, and that she could not move on after she had died until I forgave her, and that I could not move on until I forgave her. So I totally forgave her. We fell into each other's arms and sobbed, and healed instantly a lifetime of abuses that I can't speak about on this phone call, on this interview, because it's too much for your listeners. I'm writing a book called "I Wasn't Born to Be Beautiful, I Was Born to Be Brave." And all the stories will be in there. And it's not a commercial for my book.
Oh, but, we know that.
But we're more than happy to, you know, to let people listeners know about your book, too, because these are great insights. Now, yeah, I mean, to me, this is, I mean, you know, I have the same belief system probably as you. I believe in what you're saying. A lot of people might think it's outside their own reality. However, if we really think about it, we have no clue about the universe. We have zero clue. Some of us, like you, certainly have more of a clue. But you know, we should give the challenge, the Pepsi challenge to the listeners, right, Don, to say, hey,
well,
there's more to life than what appears. It's all mirrors and smoke.
Well, that's what this show is all about, that third level thinking. You don't know what you don't know, and being open to examine when you hear something from somebody else or experience something outside of the given paradigm, that you're able to open yourself up to it and take from it a experience for what it is, and not try to define it and lock it down and dismiss it, so that you can take advantage of the full learning opportunity and growth potential. And Kate just seems to embrace that naturally, which is an amazing gift. And what she's done with it since that childhood she described, if she wants to explain how she went from being in country life to going out and being in Hollywood, that's a fantastic story right there, I imagine.
That's what people are telling me, so that's why I decided to write about it. And also writing about it, David and Don, when you write about these stories, and the more people that read them, the more you share the suffering and it goes away. And there's a lot of joy in my book, too, because I always know that if somebody sends me a box of pony poop, I know there's a pony. And that's the way my stories are written, and that's what I believe. And I know there's a pony. And what I like to teach people, I'm also a life coach. I do Quantum Leap life coaching, because you can heal in a second. When you decide to, when you become willing, it's healed, it's done. And I know this because I've done it so many times. I was told I'd be paralyzed several times from spinal surgeries or not getting a spinal surgery. Even it was inoperable, the first one I had in C5 and 6. It got crushed and shattered on a commercial shoot. On the set, I got hit with 35 pounds of lead by a grip who didn't spread the tripod feet on a high roller, which is a tripod that holds hot lights. And they're very heavy and very hot, and it fell on me and crushed and shattered my disc in C5-6, and I was told I'd be paralyzed, get my affairs in order. I was a single mom, and they said, inoperable, you know, like pass the salt, and that really made me angry. So I went out, and I asked every single person, man, woman, child, hundreds of people, how do you do spiritual warfare with spinal canal stenosis? And the little kids were so cute. They'd go, have mommy kiss it. Or put a Band-Aid, or, you know, let your dog lick it, or something. You know, I got every answer, and I loved every answer. Then I met the most unlikely person, who was a heavy metal bass player with tattoos all over him and a mullet. And mullet in the 90s, even. And it was him. I asked him, I said, how do you do spiritual warfare with spinal canal stenosis? And he stuck his finger in the air, and he went, his eyebrows went up. He goes, ding, like you could hear the ding. And he's like, I know what to do. Come with me. So my son and I, I was a single mom, as I mentioned. We went to this tattoo parlor next to a strip club on Sunset Boulevard, and he introduces me to this bald man with tattoos all over his scalp and all his body, chain smoking. His name was Ralph. Turns out he was a Buddhist priest in disguise. And I shared with him my story, and I said, how do I prevent myself from being paralyzed with spiritual warfare? And my right arm had already been paralyzed. I couldn't use it. It was atrophied. It just hung there on in a sling. And he said, I know what to do. I'm going to put Om Mani Padme Hum on your ankle, your right ankle. I'm going to put a colored angel on the trigger point, where on the scapula where the high roller hit me. And he did that. And 2 weeks later, I'm at my doctor's office to go get paralyzed because there's nothing more they can do for me. So I tell the receptionist, it's not fair. I'm a single mom. I'm too young. I'm going to be paralyzed in 2 years. How could this be? It's inoperable. How could this be? Someone behind me, it was a long line of people, said, who told you that? And I turned around, and there was a 6'6" man in his 30s. I swear he glowed. And he had blue eyes. He was gorgeous. And he said, who told you that? And I said, that doctor in there told me that. And he goes, is that your MRI slides in your hand? And I said, yes. He said, come with me. So I thought, what I got to lose. So I followed him. And he took me to an exam room, put my slides up on the light where you see the x-rays. And he points and he pokes and he says, I can fix that. And I was like, what? He said, I can fix that. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. I'm Dr. Robert Bray, Jr., head of spinal disorders at Cedars-Sinai Hospital.
Oh, my gosh.
And I've done thousands of these surgeries. I've invented titanium plate fusion. And I would like to do that for you. If your insurance won't cover it, I'll do it for free. And then he looked at my tattoo, and he said, wow, what's that? And I told him the story. He goes, cool. So on March 6, 2000, I had the surgery, and it saved me from paralysis. And I needed 5 more ones after that, because when you get a fusion, the vertebrae above and below tend to blow out eventually.
So he told me
the day of my surgery, I felt so much better right out of surgery. I was just like, I just want to go ride a bike right now, and I'm still high on the anesthesia. He goes, no, you just settle down. He goes, in 5 years, you're going to need another one. And I said, I don't care. And you know what? Further? No, I won't. So I did Pilates and yoga every day, and I put off that second surgery for 10 years. But then I eventually did need to have more. And the reason I needed them in the first place is because I worked like a man as a young child on this farm, where I'd carry 50 pounds of fertilizer on each shoulder across a field in a tobacco farm for acres. And we didn't have a tractor. We had an old mule, and we had me and my siblings to weed and water and dig and plow and plant and harvest and strip the tobacco. And, I mean, it was a really rough life. And with no running water, we couldn't bathe in the winter, and it was bad haircut, clothes. You couldn't wash the clothes. You couldn't hang them on the clothesline because they'd freeze in the winter. So we just had to, you know, it was Little House on the Prairie, and there's no one on this earth, I really defy anyone to be more happy about indoor plumbing than I am, because there's nothing as beautiful as a toilet, because we had an outhouse. And you don't want to go to the outhouse in the wintertime in the middle of the night with bears all around, but that's what I did. And cut wood, carry in wood, you don't eat if you don't cut the wood and build the fire, you don't eat if you don't harvest the garden, we didn't have it if we didn't make it or grow it. So I've had such an amazing beginning to my life that I know like I know like I know, coming from such a very difficult, chaotic, traumatic background as a child, where no one had the wherewithal to give me any triage. They couldn't give it to themselves. They didn't even know we needed it. They didn't know anything else because it was the water we swam in. I was the only one who knew that it could be better, and they didn't want to hear about it. I was born spiritually wide awake, and they didn't want to ever hear me talk about that, so I had to be stifled, but you can't shut me up now. So I am very pleased about the way I was raised. I'm very pleased that I was strong enough to endure it, and I'm very pleased that I was chosen to go through that. And I also know, as I was saying, that anyone who goes through all that trauma as a child are in for the best life in their later years.
You know, as
they have so much coming to them in their universal bank account. It's overflowing. And if they're willing,
okay,
it'll come.
One quick question here. You mentioned about your arm not functioning when that whole experience with the doctors and stuff took place. After that surgery, did that take care of that challenge?
Oh, let me tell you, it was my right arm. I have a world title in arm wrestling with my right arm. Yes, I do. And it's all because I baled hay and drew water. I was the water person in my family of nine. I drew 40 buckets of water a day if I drew one. It was for laundry, cooking, cleaning, washing dishes, mopping the floor. I was the water person. And that made my lats because it was a bucket, a pulley, and a chain and a deep well. So I'm pulling up a whole bucket full of water from age 9 to 16 every single day. So you know my lats were strong.
My
secret weapon, because I'm 110 pounds with long hair and pigtails and long fingernails, just having had a baby when I did my first arm wrestling match at the Del Mar Fair. And the women who were my opponents looked like school buses with lipstick. And they brought people with them to slap their face and spit on them to make them mad enough to beat me. And when they saw me, they laughed and called me a cream puff. Well, that got my dander up. And I've never challenged anyone, ever, but I've never backed down from a challenge. And so they're laughing at me, and they think, they're looking around at their friends like, I'm gonna throw this woman to the moon. And I had so much adrenaline that my knee was shaking, bouncing up and down. It was like I was tap dancing under the table, and I couldn't control it. It was adrenaline. So the referee showed me how to take her hand, put my elbow in the donut, grab the grip to the left, and put my foot up on the step. And he said, go, and I just went, bam, and I beat the woman like in a flash of light. And she's like, that did not just happen. Do it again. And the referee said, no, that was fair. That was fair. And I said, hey, I was scared of this woman. I said, let's do it again. Let's make sure that this really happened. Let's do it again. So he goes, okay, it's your call. I said, let's do it. So he got me ready, and he goes, go. And I beat her even faster.
Wow.
She started bawling like a baby.
Oh, really? And
the crowd went nuts. They all ran up on the stage and started hugging me and high-fiving me. And I was like I was in shock because I couldn't believe what just happened. It was like when my Dr. Seuss book showed up. You know, it's like, wow.
Right, right.
How did that happen? Because it's unpredictable that somebody with my background would ever have anything magical happen to them. But it happens to me every day, something like that.
You know, it does. And
because I'm open to it.
You know, as you're telling the story about your background, you know what it reminded me of? Have you ever read a book called Man Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl?
Of course. Viktor Frankl. I love that book. Fish heads floating in his soup being beautiful.
Yeah, and it just sounds like you took on the same perspective as he did when he was in the concentration camps, where a lot of people could have turned to God, like you said in the book, and why are you doing this to me? But instead, he said, I must survive so I can share with the world that this will never happen again. Similar purpose that you have, that you can overcome obstacles that seem incredible, right, Don? That
hey,
absolutely mind-boggling. So do you see it the same way as Viktor Frankl?
I do, and the more insurmountable the obstacle, the better, the bigger they are, the harder they fall. It's just a matter of how you perceive the situation, and you can either destroy yourself or heal yourself in a moment based on how you feel about yourself.
Yeah.
And I did not choose to believe what these people told me. Now, as a child, not being mature enough emotionally to understand why this is all happening to me, I didn't know there was anything different. I thought everybody went through what I went through until I was 37. And then I found a book called Toxic Parents by Susan Forward. And when I read that, I got so mad like a wet hen. I was so mad because the worst story in that book was not even a fraction of the horrible things that had happened to me. And I was duped and brainwashed into believing that nothing was wrong with the way I was raised. And then that's when I sent an 11-page confrontation letter to 11 people in my family. all over the country. I sent them that letter, and I wrote it with my non-dominant hand so my inner child could tell them exactly how I felt, and that if they wanted a relationship with me, they would have to respect me, they would have to honor my opinions, and they would have to be kind to me. And I didn't write it for them. I wrote it for me. And when I put those letters in the mailbox in front of my son at the post office, I fell to the ground and sobbed because I knew nothing would ever be the same again. And I was right. For 3 years, my siblings, I'm one of seven of them, and my mother and her boyfriend, who, if you read my book, you'll see the things he did to me that she authorized, horrible things. And I just turn over the apple cart in this confrontation letter, and I did it for myself. And for 3 years after they received the letter, they tried to convince Los Angeles County I was going to kill myself and my son. And I sent the letter over to suicide prevention people. I said, I understand why my mother's doing that. Can I please send you this letter I just sent to her? And they said, yes. And I said, would you call me back after you get it? And they said, yes. They called me back after they got it. They said, we have, since we talked to you last, called your mother and told her to leave you alone. Your letter is the most life-affirming letter we have ever seen, and may we use it in our newsletter if we keep your name confidential. And I said, you absolutely can. And they said, good for you. We're so proud of you. We know you would never hurt yourself. We've never met anyone who wants to live more than you and to live happily and joyfully. And your mother should not be bothering you again. And then next thing happens. I find out some of my sisters get into therapy. The most tyrannical sister, my oldest one, who beat me with an iron, wrapped a cord around my neck, tried to choke me, wanted to kill me. I had pneumonia once, was unconscious with 104 fever. She tried to cut all my hair off because she told me later she was jealous of it. It was that kind of atmosphere. They were jealous of who I was and how I thought because they didn't know how to be like that. And I was happy to show them if they were willing, but they weren't. And so she wrote me a letter and apologized for all the horrible things she ever did to me. And she said, I was thinking about it as I was mad at you for 3 years about this letter. She said, I read it again and I noticed everything in it that you wrote is true. And why am I going to hate you for telling the truth? So she got on some antidepressants and we had this beautiful relationship for years. And it was awesome. And oh my God, my house is filled with gorgeous gifts that she bought for me that are so special to me. But then she stopped taking her medication, so I have no relationship with anyone in my family anymore except my son. And I'm okay with that because I know it'll turn around. They're just not ready to hear what I have to say yet, and I know one day they will be. And whether they are or not, I'm going to live a joyful life, and that is my right. That is my birthright, and I have the right to wake up. I have the right to live the way I want to live. And if I can live by example and they can learn by how I'm overcoming, because they saw what I went through as a child, and I was a scapegoat, and they also saw me become an escapegoat because I'm not in that anymore, and I'm free. So I have the right to live a free life, and so does every person on this planet. And a lot of them don't know they have permission. I gave myself permission when I read that Toxic Parents book. Mm. That's when it turned. And Susan Forward, I sent her a copy of my letter. I said, your book inspired me to the extent I wrote this letter, and here's what happened. She invited me in for a free session with her in Encino, California. And I went and I sat with her. She says, I've never met anyone like you. With no support, you wrote a letter like that. And the outcome that you've gotten from it, and you did it for yourself. I've never met anyone who did that. I said, Susan, I did have support. Your book was my support. And she just couldn't fathom how important her book was to me.
Well, Susan Forward, is she also the author of Face Your Fear and Do It Anyway?
Yeah, she's got a collection of them.
But the Toxic excellent book.
Yeah, she's just brilliant. And she doesn't even understand what a great messenger she is because she didn't really get that it was all her. It was all her that turned my life around. And it's just a matter of finding the right book. And I got to tell you, the book I'm writing, I wasn't raised to be beautiful. I was raised to be brave. My mother told me I was ugly several times a day, every day. And that dull razor blade tried to make sure I believed it because she kept my hair so choppy and my clothes dirty and smelly, and it was awful. But I have so many clothes that fills up four closets now, and I'm so blessed to have whatever I want and wear a different outfit every day and still not use them all. I mean, I understand why I do that, and I understand why my refrigerator is always full, because we didn't have food when I was little, and I understand why I want to, my biggest goal in life is to help people understand that I want to alleviate their concerns. Mm-hmm. I want to show them that they can turn a concern into a victory. I want to show them how, because there is a way to do it, and it's experiential, and you got to have willingness, and my biggest goal is to cause willingness in everyone in the planet, and if I can cause willingness in my own family, then I can cause willingness everywhere. And that's really what I'm up to doing. And with the talent management, it's more like I'm life coaching my clients. They're booking huge jobs that they never dreamed they would get when we first met. And now their resumes are as long as their legs. And it's network TV where the whole world sees them. And they never thought it was possible when they first came on with me. And the person just booked the show Shameless today, one of my clients, a really nice role. And So that's happening every day, and those are magical things like getting the Dr. Seuss books. And I'm the catalyst for it because of my belief system, my BS. You know, like I said, your BS can bring you down or it can lift you up. It's like, what are you believing about yourself? It's what you're believing about yourself that causes you to believe about the world. You can either live in a hostile world or you can live in a peaceful world, and it all depends on what you think about you.
Kate, I know you have so much more to share. And given it's perfectly acceptable, awesome, fantastic, and we have still have much time to that we could talk about. I just want to make sure that, given just what you've given that information, you typify that what we were talking about here with and you said, what is your willingness to let go and give up these concepts that people put on you so that you can be you. And mm-hmm. how you never let any of those ever stick, and how you just allowed yourself to be you and rose above. You never asked permission. You never did anything that was ever wrong. The idea of right and wrong is just so construed so much. There really is more opinions and theories than anything. It's really fact that people judge to right and wrong. And you just said, hey, there's nothing that's going to hurt anybody. And in fact, this is going to help me and maybe them. And you just do what you need to do. That's fantastic.
And once they get it, if they do in this lifetime, they're going to see what I endured. And what I endured, and I love them anyway. They're going to see that. And if that doesn't move a heart, then there is no heart there.
There's no doubt. Kate, I got to tell you, you know, we've been on the air for 8 years, or over 8 years, and we've had hundreds and hundreds of interviews, some extraordinarily ordinary people, and you know, from business to celebrities, Kathy Griffin, Terry Fader, you know, Andy Garcia, and you know, just regular people out there. I got to tell you, this interview has touched me more than any interview I've ever had. It's phenomenal. I just feel your energy, not just what you're saying, but I feel your strength, and I bet when you do life coaching, it's not just what you do, but in your presence, I bet transfer that strength to other people.
Well, when I speak to the domestic violence groups and the women are all crying around the table, I know that they've been moved and that they're going to respect themselves enough to get out of a bad situation. And for Valentine's Day, I asked my husband, he said, what would you like for Valentine's Day? I said, book me at a domestic violence shelter to give a talk. So he did that, and we both dressed up all in red, and I got to witness what a healthy relationship was like with my husband and I gave a talk for an hour, and I received the most beautiful letter from the woman who runs the place about the effect it had on the women there, and that their hardest case woman, the hardest case they had, came up to her after I left and said, I've never told this to anybody. And she shared her abuse as a child that she'd never told a soul, and she requested therapy. And the person who ran the shelter told me that that's all because of what I said and how I was. And that to me was the most deliciousness thing that I could ever feel in my life. And that's what makes me feel alive, is when I can cause something like that for even one person in this world. And, you know, it's like I've lived a great life. You know what I mean? It's like if I got taken now, I would have to say I've touched one person at least. But I want to touch a lot more, and I know God's not done with me yet.
Mm-hmm.
And
no.
I got a lot more to do.
No doubt about it.
I appreciate all you said. Yeah, thank you for sharing what you did. That really moves me, and it gives me such purpose.
One thing that you said there, Kate, that really typifies another point that most people really don't understand. When we talk about purpose, we always have the opportunity to be an example of what's possible. And that purpose can change, influence, and improve the quality of life for other people in so many fantastic ways. And all you have to do often by being the example is just being your genuine self. And that's what you did. And you shared that. You didn't have to sell it. You didn't have to go out of your way to do it. You just walked in and were yourself. And you changed lives by being the example. And that is an opportunity that everyone has for other people. Most people they'll never even meet. And that happens day in and day out. And you embrace that opportunity. And that's why, in my understanding of the way things work, why your life is so fantastic.
Yeah, it's a perception, and I'll leave you with this. If it's coming up on the end of the hour, is when you learn finally to accept yourself, it changes everything. Fasten your seatbelt; it changes everything.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And Kate, if you have time, we still have about 10 to 14 minutes remaining.
I'm here.
Excellent.
I will share and talk and listen and respond all you like.
Well, I appreciate it. Let's talk a little bit. You know, I think we talked to your husband, a couple months ago, Donald?
Last month. Yeah, a month or so back.
Yeah, and he said he met the love of his life, and of course that's you. Describe, a lot of people are in turmoil in relationships. The divorce rate is up. It's increasing. The ones that are married are not that happy. But describe what it's like for you to find, I suspect, your soulmate.
Well, one second before Kate starts. The way that I have formulated the relationship component of what I'm going to teach people definitely has a clear demarcation that most relationships are unnatural. And I think Kate will explain to us a experience that will explain how natural relationships are in a flow that work very commonly and comfortable for both people involved. And this misnomer that it takes this much work, I don't think it takes work when you're in flow. It just naturally works and people work with each other. And can you kind of give some insight with regards to that?
Yeah, Kate? Yeah, and what you just said is like, we all know that when you do what you love, you don't work a day in your life. So when you're with the person you love, you don't work a day in your life.
Nicely
so,
said.
Yeah, and what I did before I met my husband was I went on a 2-year sabbatical from dating because I knew with 3 marriages under my belt that there was something about me that was attracting that sort of person, a chronic gambler, chronic sex addict, you name it, a chronic abuser. My first one, when I was 17, abused me so much that I ran away from him, and a women's shelter saved me and helped me get a divorce through legal aid when I was 17. Turns out the guy was a pedophile who was grooming me. He knew that my stepdad was going to kidnap me and take me to Florida and marry me, and I shared that with him, and I said I'd rather die than do that because my mother hated me anyway because what she allowed him to do to me, and he still wanted to keep doing it, but she told him he could, so why should he stop? And so I would rather die than do that. And so he took me, he convinced me to go with him to Tennessee and get married because he knew a justice of the peace there. And I went and I lied about my age, which I didn't like at all. And on our wedding night, he raped me. And he beat me pretty much every day until I ran away from him 2 years later and got the divorce. So I mentioned that to show you that how I was raised did, the environment of that did cause me to do desperate things. But those risks that I took, I mean, they taught me to risk in all the great ways today. So I can't fault it. I can't feel bad about it. But what I did, this 2-year sabbatical, is I needed to detox from that first marriage. I needed to get all that out of me. I needed to heal. So so I could become my own beloved. So I didn't date anyone. I bought myself dinners. I bought myself flowers. I wore negligees for me. And I mean, I love my own company so much I would have to be very generous to have a man in my life after the 2 years. So, but what I did do, I'll tell you this, and the listeners will like this, and if they do it too, there's magic in it. I went to Macy's, which is a department store here that has fine clothing and things like that, and nice colognes, and I picked out a Tommy Hilfiger blue velvet robe without looking at the size, and I picked out matching velvet blue slippers without looking at the size, and I took a month to go smell men's cologne so that I could pick the right scent that I would like my male energy to feel like in my home. I just wanted some male energy in my home, but not an actual physical person. So I found Givenchy, and I put the robe in my closet, the slippers under my bed, and I sprayed the Givenchy over my pillow every night before I went to sleep. And within a couple months of doing that, I meet this guy, John Steller. And I'm wearing Kukui nuts because my acting client, who was a Miss Virginia USA, made it with her own hands with a favorite stone, lapis lazuli, and I wore them everywhere I went because it was so sweet of her to do that. And I walk into this Mike Dooley seminar, Mike Dooley's one of the teachers in The Secret, and I'd had him on my own radio show many times called Spiritual Hollywood. And so he invited me to the seminar. I walk in, and there's a man there wearing Kukui nuts. So, of course, with no agenda of dating or flirting, I walk over and go, "Hi, I'm Katie. What's your name? You're wearing Kukui nuts." He goes, "Hi, I'm John. Did you get yours at the Billionaire Boot Camp?" And I said, "What's a Billionaire Boot Camp?" And he just walked away. So I thought, that's cool. I'm just here for the seminar anyway, and I ignored it. And I saw him out again at a Chris Howard seminar. We're both wearing our Kukui nuts. And I went, "Hey, it's you. Good to see you again." He walks away again. And I got to know the back of his head really well. And
So
he walked away from me about four times. And then I had breakfast with Mike Dooley when he was here for another seminar. And I said, "How do I get a hold of Rhonda Byrne to have her on Spiritual Hollywood?" He said, "Well, she's got a publicist. I don't know who it is," but he really did. He just didn't want me to know. And I think Mike might have liked me for himself. I'm not sure. I could be making that up. And so he didn't tell me John's name, even though he knew. And I went and I found out. I called Joe Vitale's secretary, Suzanne Burns, and she gave me the name and number, and it was somebody in Burbank. And I'm like, "Wow, Burbank?" Because, you know, Rhonda Burns in Australia could have been halfway across the world, this publicist. So I get home, and I call the number, and I ask for the person, and he gets on the phone, and I said, "Hi, I'm Katie Romero, talk show host of Spiritual Hollywood, and I just had Mike Dooley on my radio show." And before I could say anything else, he said, "Well, I was just at Mike Dooley's seminar on Sunday." I said, "What a coincidence. So was I. Maybe you saw me. I had on a brown beret." He goes, "Yeah, I saw you. I'm the guy in the Kukui nuts." And it was like, and also Mike Dooley is the universe. He writes the notes from the universe. So the universe connected me to my husband, and who I did not like at all. And I thought, "Oh, gosh, it's him. That's too bad." But I never did get Rhonda Byrne on the radio show, but I did end up blocking John because he would write notes to me saying, signing off with gratitude and joy, and then act kind of jerky at the same time. And I thought, this guy's crazy. I'm going to block him. So I blocked him on my email, and then I got a virus on my computer. I had to buy another one, and he was unblocked. Sent me an email offering up a client of his, what was his name? Oh, shoot. The one that I saw him at a seminar, I can't believe I blanked on his name. But anyway, he offered him up for my radio show, and I said, "Oh, what's different?" He goes, "I've been seeing your notices, and you've got really great people on your show. So I thought Chris Howard wants to be on your show now." And I said, "Oh, really?" So I gave him a little hard time. But I had Chris on my show, and then I ended up writing a very transparent note about conscious divorce to a male DJ friend of mine up in Santa Barbara, and it usually wrote me right back, and 2 days went by, and he never wrote me back, and I'm like, "Oh, what's going on here?" So I checked my scent box, and it had accidentally gone to John Steller, and I was mortified because I didn't want this man to know anything personal about me. So I wrote him a letter. I said, "I'm mortified. Please don't read that note. It went to the wrong person. I don't know how it happened." It was one of those magical things again. And he goes, "Well, I did read every word," and I'm like, "Oh, no." He says, "I, too, am going through a conscious divorce. Maybe we should talk about it sometime." So we had coffee. Then we became best friends for 2 years, and the guy hauled off and fell in love with me. And, you know, I told him all my ugly stuff about my childhood, and he told me all about his. And I would have done that if I was attracted to him. In fact, I thought I would never date this man. It's my first platonic male friend. And one night we went to this gratitude dinner, and he drops me off at my car, and he goes, wait, I got to tell you something. And I said, okay, what? He said, I don't know how to say it. And I said, you can tell me anything. What do you mean? He goes, I don't know how to say it. I said, if you knew how to say it, how would you say it? He goes, I don't know. I said, just say it. He goes, I'm charmed and enchanted by you. And I said, what does that mean? He goes, I want to protect your feelings and carry your books, and I want to be your sacred partner. And I'm like, what's a sacred partner? He said, I want to be your boyfriend. And we both turned white. And as intuitive as I am, I never saw that coming. He's 10 years younger than me. I never dated younger than me. In fact, I dated older men because I was looking for a dad, because mine died when I was 3. But I've since gotten over that. And John and I, what makes it work so well is we're not afraid of each other's fear, and we're not afraid to talk about the hard stuff, the microscopic grains of sand about what's the payoff in a bad behavior. What's the payoff in a self-destructive behavior? We all have them, but we talk about it, and we trace it right down to its genesis, to its core, and we pull it out by the roots together. And it's such a joy to have these conversations with somebody. He knows that I've got his back. I know he's got my back. And we're still best friends, and sometimes we forget that we're married because we're such best friends. And then, of course, we get to go on a date and remember that we're married and, you know, spark up that romance. But it's just such a joy, and it's as magical as when I got the Dr. Seuss books. You know, wow. It's as magical as when I made Silly Putty disappear when I was 3 years old. I just said abracadabra so many times in this red handkerchief until I looked and it was gone. And I knew then I could endure anything, and that's really what helped me survive my childhood. Is making that silly putty disappear.
I think that's so fantastic, Kate. And what you said is basically what I try to explain to people in the relationship arena, is that we're so visioned into the self-serving physical side of things that when you got to meet John and can pace yourself with a mental and emotional level where you really got to know each other on that level, everything else takes care of itself. And that's so fantastic that you were able, over all the challenges and experiences that you had, to come to that point and have that realization. And for people who wonder what love is, I mean, that really is love. And most people just dream of love and are in love with the idea of love, but you've actually found it. And that's something that, given your story, you definitely deserve. So we're so happy to hear. And that story,
thank you.
That story was fantastic, because it just goes to show that how universe, you were saying, it finds a way to get you to figure it out, even if you're not aware of it. And so many people, it's like dropped in their lap, and they say, why isn't it showing up? It's like, you know, how much more in your face can it be sometimes?
Yeah.
Well, you got to give up how it's supposed to look.
Yeah.
You got to give that up, because I knew there was a pony, and there sure as heck was.
There's no doubt. And Kate, I can't believe this hour has flown by. We deliberately did not have a commercial break, because we are just so enthralled with what you're saying. Give us some contact information. Anyone that, anything that you want people to know about you, contact information, what you could do for them. Go ahead.
Well, just find me on Facebook. I wear all these different hats, so I've got lots of different pages. I've got Facebook, How I Busted Out of My Jeans, where I blog, and I've got a Facebook page called Quantum Leap Life Coaching. I've got a page called Stellar Angel Talent. I've got my regular Facebook page, which is Kate M. Romero. It's the best place to contact me, because Facebook is, you know, people will check that before they check their personal email these days. And just say hi to me and let me know what's going on with you. And let's stay in touch. I'm interested in everyone who's interested in a better life, and you know, that's really what lights me up and gives me purpose and just gives me my life. I get my life out of that every day, and just you know, ask me anything, and I will write you back.
Well, Kate, it's been an honor, a pleasure. We'd love to have you on again. And let's see, in my travels, when I go to L.A.
I've got plenty more stories.
Oh, yeah. And I'd love to meet you in person. I have a bunch of clients in L.A., so
sure.
We'll arrange that, too. Thank you so much.
quite welcome. It's my extreme pleasure.
Kate, I knew when I spoke to John and he mentioned that connection you both had, given my interest in proving to the world that love that they think and dream of really exists, and that's one of my goals is to get people to understand that, to be able to hear your full story that you've explained, and we know there's more of it, but you've given such content and such depth, and we can't help but appreciate everything that you have to offer to give us the opportunity to get to know you better. And I had talked to you on the phone for a little bit before this, and it's just so fantastic that there are people like yourself out there that we can connect with and make this world the place that we know it can be. And we thank you for your time. We know you have a lot to offer a lot of people, and everyone who's interested in connecting with you, I hope they do so.
I do as well. And one last thought is, if I hadn't have become my own beloved, I never would have attracted this relationship. And it all starts with you. You don't have to be anywhere. Just start where you are. Just start where you are. Just start where you are. Get a book, read it. Get a journal. But learn to love yourself. Learn to be your own beloved. And there is nothing that can be kept from you.
Well, thank you so much, Kate Romero. We look forward to having you on again. And you have a great day, great week, and a great forever.
Yeah, definitely on my way.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Donald, phenomenal. This is the best interview, most inspirational I've ever witnessed. Thank you for getting her on, and this is the end of the show. We'll see everyone next month, same time, same place. The first Thursday of the month at 11.
Correct. And anybody wants to get in contact with me, go to getontoit.com, getontoit.com, or don@getontoit.com.
Thank you, Don. Have a great day. Everyone else, have a great day. We'll see you next time.